Welcome to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, issues, and events surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm Stephen Conway. With me, of course, it's Jeremy Finestone. We are contributors to the Fight Game Media Network, and we're here to talk New Japan Cup and some other odds and ends. And this week has frankly been a bit of a mixed bag. We've seen some good matches. We've seen some rough ones. We also have a new NJPW Strong Women's Champion. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk a little bit about the passing of Yutaka Yoshi as well. So plenty to talk about as usual here this week. We had a lot of shows to watch. And Jeremy, just the overall vibe of New Japan for you this week. I mentioned the mixed bag. I feel like there were some highs and lows over here. We're not seeing a ton of consistency yet. But your thoughts just on these a lot of shows to watch over this past week as we continue in the cup.
Okay, so a couple weeks ago, I made a idea that TJP could go really far in this tournament, and it didn't really work out. And the reason I did that was because otherwise I saw a completely predictable tournament where it's just like, you got a title match in the King of Pro Wrestling here. You got the tag titles here. You have that never open weight title here. You have the TV title here. So, or not the TV title. But I was thinking of Zack Sabre Jr. when he used to have it. But you have all these titles set up, and you have all these guys that you can predictably see are going here, there, and everywhere. And you're just like, okay, there's no twist. There's no turn. Yes, Jack Perry in the House of Torture is interesting. But right now, he's just a goon. You know, it's like he's just a goon in the tournament with a stable that's existing. And so I don't think it's mixed bag for me. I just find it so predictable. Like, it's just, there's no elevation to the whole thing.
Dunstan Williams is here and has submitted a few questions before the show, which we appreciate. Hello, Dunstan. And everybody that's watching, we appreciate you taking the time. He says, does New Japan feel uninspiring to either of you? And I think that's a good term for it. It does feel a little bit uninspired right now. And the booking, certainly, as this does feel a little bit more like a cut and paste job, in some ways, but it also just kind of has that kind of feel in the ring right now, just a lot of sameness. And for instance, we're not going to speak a word about the undercard matches on this tour this past
week. There's no point.
There really isn't. These are all preview tags. They have a very house show feel to them in that perfectly competently wrestled, but no one's going out of their way to do much of anything serious, dangerous, or even tell much of a story. There's a little bit going on with Desperado and Ishii, and we'll get into some of the tea leaves. But
if you want to become an expert on Gino Gambino and Walker Stewart interactions with each other, you're going to have to watch everything, because it's been a journey so far, and that's been a little bit fun on the undercard. But that's niche stuff. That's not wrestling. That's just watching two people who've never worked with each other vibe and figure out how to gel. So when it's stuff like that and random stuff like Jack Perry almost missing his cue on night four when he's trying to pull the ref out of the ring,
almost.
And that's the most interesting stuff that you got going on with this right now. It's like, yeah, you can just watch the cup matches.
And the other thing we'll get into a little bit later, but Tangaloa is making memes at an unfortunate rate for him. He's making memes out there. But Venkin says he saw some weird clips this week. Yep, there were some weird things. But by the way, Gino Gambino, terrific shape. Dude's gotten himself jacked. He looks good. Him. Yeah, him. Yeah. Looking at him. All right, well, we're just going to go through these tournament matches. Like I said, the prelim matches are absolutely skippable. Nothing wrong with any of them, but they're just prelim matches. So we're going to go on with the show from Yamanashi. That's where we begin on the 8th. So Yamanashi, that was back on last Friday. So in this one, three tournament matches. So the first round, they had three matches a night. After that, two each. And on this one, the first tournament match of the night was Hikuleo and Bolton Oleg. There was a pretty cool pre-match presentation to Bolton from a local amateur wrestling club. They even had an exchange student from Kazakhstan, which is where Bolton is from. And so they gave a little bouquet of encouragement to Bolton, a little presentation there in Yamanashi. That's pretty cool. The match itself was fine. It was a little bit sloppy at times, but, you know, Bolton's green. He's learning. Sure. It was a fine effort. In the end, Hikuleo beat him with a godsend chokeslam. There were no upsets here. Hikuleo made the knockout round of the G1. I did not think that they were going to put him out in the first round of the New Japan Cup. So no upset here. They do try to protect Hikuleo. Perfectly fine match. Handshake after. Hikuleo moves on to the second round where the real story is going to be told anyway.
You know, we had a conversation last week about how this match was going to go, and I thought the idea would be that Oleg Bolton would put up a fight that nobody but Hikuleo would be able to withstand. And that's basically what happened, is that there were a number of offensive moves that he took, that Hikuleo took, that another wrestler probably wouldn't be able to withstand. And then Hikuleo won. Great concept behind the match. I continue to have a lot of confidence with Bolton. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Hikuleo is the best of the Tongans by far that have left in New Japan.
Well, we had the other thing about Bolton, like, of course, this is only his, I believe, second singles loss, the other one being to Zach. So, you know,
it's Hikuleo. I'm a big Hikuleo believer.
Yeah, no, I am too. I have no problem with this. And again, the story is for the next round. That's really Hikuleo's story here. This is just a way to get Bolton into a good spot. And, you know, he did fine. Still,
we well. Like Hikuleo. We want him to come back on the show. So make sure to check out his Patreon, Hiku's Hub.
All right. After that, we had Callum Newman and Gabe Kidd. Now we're talking. Now, this was a good match. This was a really good match. Really solid showing from Newman. He worked well with Gabe Kidd. So he had somebody who's more flying, more technical, and certainly the speed against a brawler. And Kidd's one of the best brawlers in the game right now. The chemistry was good. You know, it was a win for Gabe Kidd. Again, not much doubt about this one. We feel like Gabe Kidd is somebody that they have their eyes on for big things in the future. And Newman right now is the lower man on the United Empire totem pole. That's not to do with talent. That's just where he is at the moment. And I have a feeling that won't always be the case, but it is for right now. So in the end, cradle pile driver by Gabe Kidd got the victory, but Newman is really coming along. And it seems like each time he's in a match against a bigger name than him, a good worker in a singles match, I'm talking about, he's gotten a lot of reps in preview tags, but he steps up. And this is another example of him stepping up. Each time I see him wrestle a singles match, against heavyweights, whoever, Callum Newman looks more and more like a future star to me.
You know what's also amazing is Will Ospreay is an excellent scout of talent. Right. He picked this guy out. He's like, you know what? You're coming with me to Japan.
He found Akira too, didn't he? He found Akira, I believe.
Yeah, and he's gone with Michael Oku and all these guys that he's handpicked, man. Like, that dude has an eye for talent that no one else sees. And man, I hope Callum Newman is one of those guys that they're able to build around for the next 5 years, because there's something there. And I don't know what his timetable will be and if he gets snapped up elsewhere or what his interest is, but there's a diamond in the rough on this one.
Do you think he has bulked up just since being in New Japan? It seems like he's a little bigger.
Yeah. He looked like Zack Sabre Jr. when he first came in, and now he's starting to fill out around like the shoulders and the chest, but not really the arms. So it's kind of, but he hasn't lost any speed. That's his big thing. Is he is incredibly fast, and he's able to counter moves incredibly well. And while we've talked a lot about Newman, we cannot forget to give Gabe Kidd his flowers in this match too, because holy moly, I don't have enough great things to say about Gabe Kidd.
Yeah, he's
the
fabulous.
Intensity that he has, the vibe when you're in a match with him that you feel like you're in a real fight against this guy. I felt it in his upcoming match that we'll talk about, but he makes me believe in a lot of ways, like John Moxley does, that you are in more than a wrestling match. You are in a fight for survival.
Yeah, it's very good. And by the way, I make fun of that phrase all the time. And then I just talked, there was a nice pre-match ceremony with Bolton Oleg where they gave him his flowers. So there you have it. Sometimes it's literally true, I tell you. The main event in this one was another terrific match. So this show overall ended very well. Semifinal and final were real good matches. This was Yuya Uemura against Shingo Takagi. And this one went over 23 minutes. It's in Shingo's hometown. This is where he's from. This area anyway, the Yamanashi area. And he lost in his hometown last year. And one of the things I noticed when we look at some of the attendance, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, another mixed bag, but attendance here, I also noticed that a lot of these buildings are regulars on the New Japan Cup tour. And some of them don't really see New Japan other than during the New Japan Cup. You know, it's like they have their circuit for the cup. And a couple of the places, it's about the only time they go there. Now, Yamanashi's a little different, but it was Shingo's hometown, and he lost last time. So he had some making up to do. And the story was Uemura working Shingo's arm, and which is smart because he's gotten a couple of surprise submissions off of that arm bar that he got Yota Tsuji, for instance, and things. So that established that there was a threat to Shingo here, that he might get trapped in that arm bar and have to tap. They worked a slower main event style because they were going 20, and Shingo knows exactly how to do that. So this is an example, Jeremy, what I was talking about. When Tsuji and Uemura worked 20, 25 minutes, it had its little dead spots because they're not used to doing so. Well, here he is in there with Shingo Takagi, and it was fabulous. So it just shows you it takes experience, takes time to learn how to work a long match. Mm-hmm. And here he is in the guy, in with a guy who knows exactly how to do it, and Shingo Takagi. And these are the kind of things that are going to make Yuya Uemura a main event guy down the road when you learn how to work a match like this. And it was good. It was very Shingo stylistic.
Yes.
In that they went back and
forth. It was a Shingo match.
They went back and forth with hard clotheslines, you know, boots, that type of stuff. And Uemura would work his way back to the arm. Shingo hit a Made in Japan for a two count, and that's what kicked things in. You know, you notice that gear shift in a New Japan match when guys start working towards big moves and countering them. And Uemura got a long arm bar spot for a rope break, but Shingo did get that rope break. He came back with a pumping bomber for two, last of the dragon for three. And Uemura kicked out of some hard shots, some good near falls in this match. And this is one that's going to help Yuya down the road, even though he took the L.
This, like, we talked last week about who we thought would advance and who wouldn't. And after Yuya lost the hair, and then the obvious comparisons to Naito and Stardust by Charlton on the broadcast, basically everything that they told you that he was in a rebuilding phase, you know, he wasn't going to win this match. And Shingo, the more I think about it, seems like a very safe pick to win this whole thing, because Moxley and Naito are going to happen. Moxley already faced Shingo. If Shingo faces Naito before Moxley does, by dearth of winning the cup, and loses or wins, doesn't, you know, like, but I would presume, you know, loses. You've got a good cup, you've got a good winner, you've got the threat of Finley, because I still don't think Sonata is making it past the semifinals without, like, unless Ghetto's fully on autopilot and wants to punish everybody and threaten Sonata for another match with Naito in April, I don't think Sonata is going to make it to the finals, because just not the thing. So what do you think? Shingo to the finals?
I mentioned it before the year, actually before Wrestle Kingdom. I thought that if you were going to put down betting odds, I would say that David Finlay was someone who could win this New Japan Cup. I still think that's very possible. You know, you almost talked me into TJP right there, but I still think that's very possible.
It was, and I just wanted it to be interesting, man. Like, David Finlay, God bless him. Like, just having the top heel and a top babyface go for it. Like, Naito's a babyface, so it kind of feels like it's just going to be Finley, and then we're going straight to that match. And if that's the case, like,
but Shingo's a good idea too. And I mentioned that Shingo was another one of my favorite. You know, I thought, you know, Finlay, if he gets past TJP, or Shingo were good choices. Tsuji's also a good choice. We'll get to that in a little bit, because, you know, that's something that could happen. But yeah, you mentioned chalk. There's a lot of chalk that that term for betting favorites winning. There's a lot of chalk in this tournament. You're right. And Shingo has chalk. He is somebody that they do not lose, that they do not beat very often. And when he does lose, it's usually to tell a story. So,
frankly speaking, he is more valuable than ever right now.
Oh boy. And Venk and Bjorn said that Shingo can't do bad matches. And it seems like that's the case. Although Uemura is a talented dude. So, but he does also, well, we're going to get to these comments. I like these.
I don't remember the last time I saw Uemura match and thought, really didn't deliver on that one. That guy didn't show up for work that day. You know, like the dude can go in a 5-minute match, he can go in a 10-minute match. He can go in a singles 20-minute match. Is it going to be a 5-star like deal? No, but that's not what he's being paid to do right now. That is not his time. That's not his moment. Those days are going to come and he's going to shine, but we're not there yet.
We move on to Sunday, the 10th, and that was in Hyogo with a good crowd, 2,476. That's up over 300 and the biggest crowd they've had post-pandemic in Hyogo. And before the pandemic, Hyogo was even hotter, Jeremy. They had some crowds over 4,000 in this building in the past right there. But working, again, the trend is solid in Hyogo anyway. Not in all the towns this week, but Hyogo went from about 2,000 to 2,400. And again, one of those each, there is good basis for comparison because they do usually run a New Japan Cup show in Hyogo. So it's nice to have almost apples to apples year to year. You can really kind of take a look at it. So this wasn't bad.
I want to stop right now and I want to say something real quick.
Okay.
If you are listening at the 16-minute mark and you want to know what the best night of the New Japan Cup has been so far, and you don't want to wait until the end of this podcast to hear that bit of information, but you want all the rest of the analysis, night 3 was the best night of the New Japan Cup, the night we just talked about. Everything else had some good stuff, bad stuff, but that was top to bottom, 3 matches that delivered. And so if you want to know, that's the night that you should jump in if you want to watch a full night of cup matches.
El Fantasmo faced Mikey Nichols in the first cup match in Hyogo, and this was good. There was less flying than ELP than usual. He wrestled more against Mikey there, but he's good at that as well. Nichols ended up starting a pinning scramble that ELP won with a crucifix. Perfectly good match. Nothing really wrong with it. It wasn't a world beater right there, but they were third from the top. You know, you save some things. But one thing I noted here was at this point, El Fantasmo gets the win. All 3 members of GOD left in New Japan had won their first round matches and moved on. Hikuleo against Bolton Oleg, Tangaloa beat Great Okan, and Fantasmo with a win over Nichols right here. So at least a strong first round for the babyface GOD faction.
Mirror Image, House of Torture, GOD. They both had a kind of a campaign where they both looked a little bit strong coming out the gate with Jack Perry, Evil, and Ren Narita. So, you know, I kind of like that good and bad, and it feels kind of fun. I don't know. This match, a little scrappy, a little sloppy, just kind of like brought it down to the ground. And I'm going to let you get to the more of the explanation, but it just, something about it just didn't feel like they were able to gel, and they just kind of, the ground and pound was not something I was expecting out of this match. It felt like there was a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And there isn't a whole lot of move-for-move highlights I can give on this. It was just a solid match. But yeah, not a world beater for sure. And the next one was Here to Troll Us. So again, this one pissed a lot of people off. Ren Narita versus Taichi. However, if you listen to this show, we warned you that this is where this was going, that they were teasing us with the dangerous techers facing one another. And we said, they're not going to give it to us. They aren't going to do it. They're not going to. This is too good for House of Torture to pass up. And indeed, that's what happened. But there were a lot of shenanigans before the match and during the match. It was very deliberately paced when they did wrestle. A lot of fighting in the crowd. They moved around a lot of furniture. Dick Togo distracted the ref while Taichi had a stretch plum. And he was tapping out. Narita was. Referee didn't see that. Then there was a ref bump. No surprise. House of Torture came down, but not Jack Perry. That would be important. And as House of Torture came down to pile onto Taichi, just 5 guys made the save. All right. So far, I'm on board. The baby faces don't look like morons. They're helping each other out. And they still didn't look like morons. It's just that it turns out that House of Torture had one more arrow in the quiver. And that is when Taichi hit a backdrop driver. The referee counted and counted and counted. And finally, Jack Perry made it to the ring and pulled him out before he could count the three. But that was a close. That was he had to stretch a little bit right there. That he almost missed that a little bit. That allowed Yoshinobu Kanemaru to come back.
If he was still Jungle Boy, he would have swung right in and gotten it.
He spit the whiskey in Taichi's face, hit him with a bottle. Then it was the double cross from Narita and the pinfall. So almost disaster here. He almost didn't get there. But nevertheless, the whole point was I like this a little bit better. I knew they weren't going to give us Zach and Taichi. I just knew it. No, so I was ready for this to happen. And I am glad that at least Just Five Guys tried to help. And it didn't make Taichi look like a moron by not bringing friends with him to a gang fight, right? But again, that you know, the House of Torture is very devious. They had an extra guy there because Perry, and this is actually shows some
Perry the goon.
Perry doesn't goon. Perry until here had not joined in the House of Torture interference in the other matches much, and sometimes didn't come out at all. So for this one, you know, you kind of got the idea that okay, well maybe Just Five Guys will run him off. But anyway. This was how it was going to go. They were going to keep Ren Narita in this. They were going to get heat on him by not giving us the match we wanted, which is interesting business strategy. We'll work on that. But it was Narita over Taichi, and Narita goes on to face Zach in the second round.
Okay, so there are two ways to look at this, right? One, this was an overbooked mess. Like, just so much extra that was added to this match in order to get to the result. You have that. On the other hand, you're looking at it like, wow, they're really protecting Taichi. They threw the kitchen sink at this dude to get him to lose. Like he wasn't falling to shenanigans. It was sheer brutality and timing that got him to lose this match. And so good on them for protecting their old guys, but you almost like you saw it. You know how this is going with House of Torture. You just know. And, you know, somebody mentioned in the Discord that, you know, there are fans in Japan that legitimately do not like House of Torture. And they find it to be tiresome as well. And so, I don't know. There's got to be a little bit of give and take there that some people are a little exasperated with it there. And if you see magic like this, you're like, I can see why they are, but at the same time, it was a means to an end, and this is pro wrestling. And this is how they get through like what they need to do to elevate Ren Narita, to make Taichi look strong so that he is viable for the rest of the year. And it's pro wrestling. I'm not sure I agree.
See, I think the House of Torture is over more as heels in Japan than it is to the Western audience. I think the Western audience, House of Torture still has a lot of go away heat. We don't like this.
Right.
But we see a different brand of wrestling all the time over here where the House of Torture style looks a little bit irritating next to some of the stuff we see in North America. My impression, and you know, from merchandise sales ain't bad, that type of stuff, I feel like they are over more as traditional heels in Japan than they are over here. It's not, there's some right. go away heat, but I think people are genuinely have heel, traditional pro wrestling heel heat toward House of Torture in Japan. Meaning I think they're a little bit more over there than they are over here. And it's not so bad among the Japanese audiences because they're also not used to seeing this done differently and better. But
yeah, I think there's a lot of people that want to logic out how things work in Japan based off of what they see from American wrestling. And I do it. I do it from time to time and you know it blows up my face. So yeah. I've learned not to. But yeah. You know it's like it's a common thing and I get it. So
yeah. And of course Venkin mentions you know Kanemaru being a POS to his former stablemate. Yeah and that's a long running story that Taichi's underlying anger toward Kanemaru for turning his back on him after they had gone through so much in Suzuki-gun. That's something I think is going to go on for a while, and we might even see them against each other. It'll have a little extra sauce on it whenever they meet in preview tags. So that'll happen too. And yeah, but I mean, the match was It was fine. The whole thing was a vehicle for the House of Torture.
It
angle,
was executed to get to the direction it needed to go. And eventually Taichi will get his revenge, probably in the G1 or something like that. And it'll be fine.
One of my great bits of frustration with the Shota Umino evil match at New Beginning was that they made Shota look dumb. He didn't bring friends to a gang fight when he knew that stuff like this was going to happen. Now we've seen Just Five Guys. We've also seen L.I.J. come down and help each other. We've seen it a little bit because, Taguchi helped Desperado a little bit. So we're starting to see a little bit of that pushback from the babyface side. But for Umino, I just thought he looked like a numbskull and looked silly because he didn't have help. He lost again and failed. You know, that was part of my frustration toward that evil win. And at least, if we're going to do this House of Torture stuff, let's not make everybody look like morons during it. And so the guy's coming out to help, but House of Torture having to take increasing numbers of steps.
I thought of that too.
Yeah, that I'm okay with because I think that means at least things are evolving and they aren't just doing the same thing for the last 2 years. They aren't. Now we're starting to see baby faces charge in. Now they're starting to have to work a little harder to outfox everybody. I at least appreciate that evolution of House of Torture.
I'm honestly fine with House of Torture and Jack Perry. I really like, I kind of like the idea of Evil teaming up with Jack Perry to wrestle some dudes in New Japan at Forbidden Door in New York. That actually sounds a little bit of fun to me. And Red Narita, like, do a six man for the never open weight or whatever, you know, like AEW six man. I don't care. I want to see it. It sounds like fun. You know,
we don't know what's going on with the never open weight trios titles. Those are in limbo.
Oh, we got to do it for that one as well. So
yeah,
well, but yeah, it's just, I like House of Torture. I don't care. I get exasperated, but I move on with my day relatively quickly. I don't get in arguments on the internet about House of Torture. I don't care that much. Because it's a heel stable that doesn't do anything truly offensive and just tries to, like, do dastardly, like, snidely whiplash shit to win a match. Like, I'm for that. Like, I'm totally okay with it.
it depends on how they do it in one. But Venkin mentions that this is just to grow hate toward HOT. He's got it pegged. He said, you see a potential good match. House Torture takes it away from you, like Finlay took Osprey, Moxley, that type of thing. So, yep, that's exactly what they're doing. And so we will have Narita and Zach. And now, moving on to that, the main event of that show was Yota, Tsuji, and Jeff Cobb, and this match was great. Mm-hmm. I really like this one. We had a warning as to what was going to happen because Cobb was unbeaten in that building. Uh-oh. Anytime you announce that. Cobb threw Tsuji around a lot early. Tsuji rallied, hit a vertical suplex on Cobb. Cobb is almost unique in wrestling. Not quite unique, actually, just unusual. But anytime someone hits a simple vertical suplex on him, it gets a pop just because the way Cobb is shaped. For instance, he's so thick and so big that it just looks like an incredible feat of strength for someone to hit a vertical suplex on him.
He's like,
and
that Cobb, guy from Lucha Underground named Matanga Cueto.
Yeah, I'd love to see that guy take on Cobb. if I could just get Sami Zayn against El Generico someday. But, you know, the whole thing was... But you know what I'm talking about. It's like one of those things where he goes up for the move so smoothly that it just looks like some guy is a world beater whenever he does it, you know, because Cobb knows how to take it as well. Tsuji escaped the tour of the islands. And then in my favorite moment in this match, Jeremy, he tried a gene blast. He went charging in for his spear, but Cobb basically caught him coming in, you know, like just caught him like he was stopping a leg shoot in wrestling. When someone shoots the leg in wrestling and you kind of sprawl out a little bit, he didn't totally sprawl out, but he caught him and then just turned it into a razor's edge. Looked fantastic. Loved it. Big moves after that, spin cycle. Cobb hit a spear of his own. Crowd was loving the near falls in this. So this one really built nicely. Eventually, Tsuji did hit a curb stomp and a double jumping curb stomp, you know, and a gene blast finally landed and he got the pin over Jeff Cobb. Really good match. Tsuji seemed to have a lot of momentum right now, and this felt like a big win for him.
Big boy match. You know, it's like one of those two beefy guys coming in there and just, you know, the meaty men slapping meat. Like, you don't think of Yota Tsuji like that, but like, this was one of those just mean guy matchup. They came in there, and afterward, Jeff Cobb was talking about respect that he had for Yota Tsuji, coming in there with backstage comments. It's not going to win any awards, but this was a solid match. And
this, good main event.
Yeah, this is a solid elevation of Yota Tsuji to let him know to the rest of the fandom, like, where he's kind of positioned in New Japan. You know, like, getting a win over Jeff Cobb is a feather in your cap. And he's one of the first of the of this generation to have a big win like that.
All right. So that was it for that show there. Again, a strong crowd in Hyogo. And then we moved on to Ehime, which is a bit of the opposite. So let's talk about Ehime just a little bit, because we spent two nights there. And in two different cities. Ehime is a prefecture in Shikoku Island. I want to make sure I get that right. Shikoku Island. So it's a different island than Honshu, where you see Osaka and Tokyo and Hiroshima. It's just south of Hiroshima. And it's one of the prefectures on that island. And it has a total population of 1.3 million, but it's spread out a little bit. And frankly, the shows there, they run this regularly. It's a New Japan Cup town, or prefecture. They do run the cup there, and they do things other times sometimes, but it's mostly a New Japan Cup prefecture, and it kind of doesn't draw all that well and never really has. I think it's just servicing the area a little bit and just saying, well, like, well, we've got to do a show over there. We do have fans, right? When there are people,
they ask for a show, so we'll do one.
Yeah, but from 2400 to 838, you know,
were a couple of sparse looking crowds.
That's not even right. This was in Matsuyama on the 11th. This is the largest city in Ehime, 668, and that's actually up a little bit.
Sure.
So, but just a little bit. It never draws that great, despite being the largest city there. But you know, you gotta service the area. So, what they saw was Jack Perry against Toru Yano. So I can't imagine this is going to help a whole lot. So. And Colin mentions this, and it's worth saying. I'm frustrated because the Jack Perry matches have actually been decent despite the House of Torture nonsense. And then we had another comment from Venkin where he thought that Jack Perry's going to win the whole damn tourney. I don't know about that one, but what if he did? But what we're looking at here is Perry and Yano. They did what they could, but we knew how this would go. Yano used the antiseptic spray in the eyes. He threw the jacket over Perry's head and rolled him up to tease an upset. I'm not sure anyone actually thought he was going to upset it. Yujiro attacked, but he ended up getting himself handcuffed to the rail instead. Rough night to Yujiro. That handcuff stuff's not working out for Yujiro. He's going to have to try to find something else. A lot of pin combos, that type of thing. Quick flash pins, which Yano does well. You know, he has that amateur wrestling background. He can make it look like he could wrap somebody up and get a flash pin. So Perry was at least in a little bit of theoretical jeopardy there. And but eventually, because the House of Torture has to cheat to beat Honma now in the prelim matches, so we're doing it here again. Kanemaru came out, House of Torture beat down after a ref bump. Yano got a low blow to tease him getting through it, but Perry ended up giving Yano a low blow and the knee for the three count. It was not good. But this wasn't a situation where Perry was really going to be able to shine a match with Toru Yano. We're not expecting five stars here.
I'm going to blow your mind here.
Oh, God. You liked it, didn't you?
I did. I thought it was the most...
You are short on sleep.
I thought it was the most watchable Yano match I've seen in years.
It was a better version of... It was a better version of a Yano match than usual.
It was Yano as more of a straight... And there were gags that he did, but they wrestled for like 5 or 6 minutes, and there was like legitimate spots here where these two actually wrestled each other. And I was like, holy moly, these two are actually having a wrestling match for like a second here. And, you know, it's like, you'll bring up the Zack Sabre Jr. match. Paul Fontaine did when we were talking about it. I mentioned it. And I'm like, that was kind of a different match because Zack Sabre Jr. kind of forces him to do like, to change it up. This was Yano wrestling a Yano match, but tempered to like a guy unfamiliar with all the bells and whistles of a Yano match. He wasn't throwing this at Jack Perry. So you got a very moderated Yano match with like wrestling to like pepper in between. And it just flowed really well to me. And I was fine with it. But it was just it was the best Yano match that I've seen in a long time. I was highly entertained.
The next one was another second round match between Sanada and Yoshihashi. Now, both of these guys are excellent tag team wrestlers, but they can be sluggish in singles matches. And we got that here, unfortunately. And I say, seriously, the first 10 minutes of this match, completely forgettable and skippable, like not much happened. And here's the thing. Both of these guys tend to take a long time between moves. And it reminds me a little bit of Randy Orton in that if you have someone who isn't all that charismatic enough or up for really selling big, it can feel like you're running in deep mud. You know how sometimes when Randy just takes things too slow and he's not in, we've seen it like that Adam Copeland match, right? He was still Edge, you know, where it went all the way around the whole building that one time was endless. I think that match is still going. It's still happening. But then you get Randy against somebody who really turns it on the selling, and it's exciting and it has tension. And this is two guys that take 30 seconds and don't have a ton of charisma to carry it. And this match felt like a slog.
Too much psychology, not enough action.
Sanada got a deep O'Connor roll in this one for a near fall. That was a really good false finish and probably the highlight of the match when Yoshihashi kicked out of it. And then Sanada missed a Shining Wizard. So the fans were suddenly behind Yoshihashi thinking they might get the upset in this one, right? Because Sanada did work hard to get that idea over. But in the end, Yoshihashi's big singles move is Karma, which is made in Japan. It's the same move, but he calls it Karma. And Sanada managed to escape that and hit the deadfall for the three count. So again, Sanada, we're talking about chalk here. Yoshihashi's story is already done. He defeated Kenta, and that sets up the tag team title match. Right, so Yoshihashi had already accomplished his New Japan Cup mission. Sanada can move on here. Again, you know, boy, 668 people, and they see Perry versus Yano and Sanada Yoshihashi. It's hard for me to imagine we're going to get 700 people next time.
The right guy won this match. Remember when I said that night three was far and away the best of the night that we saw? The prelims for these weren't great. This match in general and this whole... I was more entertained by Jack Perry and Toriano than this match, and that's fine. That's just my preference. You do not have to watch this unless you are a complete and total completist for watching every bit of the New Japan Cup for some level of psychology to read into the future of how things are going to go. I'm not necessarily sure Sanada versus Yoshihashi is adding to any particular lore or dynasty of legacies moving forward.
And it shows where people's niches really are, because Yoshihashi was back in preview tags in the prelims right there. And watching he and Goto work together, they're like, it's just like water flowing. They're so good. And they know exactly, they have so many double team moves and waves for one person to help the other suddenly. And, you know, like they're reading each other's minds and things. Some people are just really good tag team wrestlers. And I think that Yoshihashi, thankfully, has found an outlet like Bishamon where he can really excel. And he's an excellent tag wrestler, but a long singles match is just not going to be the way to go for him.
You know, I know nothing, right? But there's a part of me that wonders if they two just had an inability to figure out who the ring general in the match was going to be. And so they just kind of both wanted to take charge, and it just took a while for them to figure out what the hell they were doing with each other.
Yoshihashi tried hard to get a backstory for this one too. And Venkin just says, yeah, that Orton Edge match, which is so awful. Match. The greatest wrestling match ever with 40. Oh my goodness. They were just trolling us with that one too. But, oh boy. Anyway. Yeah. The greatest wrestling match ever. Oh, they're so cute. But, Yoshihashi tried, because you remember how we were talking about in the buildup to Naito versus Sanada, they showed the tryout from way back in the day when Naito was accepted into the dojo, and Yoshihashi and Sanada were there, but were not selected at the time. And so Yoshihashi said, well, you know, we both tried. Neither one of us got in. I was the persistent one that got into the dojo. He went off in other directions and came in through the back door. So two different, and it wasn't really even knocking that so much, but just saying the two very different paths converge back together again here. He tried. It just didn't quite come together as a match.
Yeah. Do you think it happened? You know?
Yep.
You know, even though we say that, we have the next night, which is a case of one match under-promising and over-delivering, and another match that under-promised and still under-delivered.
Let's get into it. So next day, they were at the Ehime City Gym. Now, this was in Uwajima, which is a much smaller town, but it drew 200 more. So, or not quite 200, 170 more or something, 838 in a much smaller town. So about even from what it's done, this is about what Ehime does. So maybe that's why they only come here for the cup. Who knows? But the first match, Jeremy, in the tournament, Tagaloa versus David Finlay. I'm going to let you take over for a brief moment.
This match, there is a sense that Ghetto has a lot of confidence with the Gorillas of Destiny. And sometimes it is well-placed. Sometimes it's misplaced. I actually took the liberty of taking the very generous Chris Charlton narration from the website and explained the results of this match because,
please,
quite frankly, it is glorious, and I'm going to read it to you right now. Loa tried to call on his offensive diversity, landing a crossbody, but finding more success with haymaker to Finlay and a powerful short arm clothesline before a boss man slam for two. A powerbomb set up Loa for the sacrifice knee, but he was reversed into oblivion for two. As the match swung back and forth, Loa got ape shit, but didn't end the match, and a second sacrifice attempt was stopped with a brutal headbutt. Overkill followed soon enough, and Finlay was through. My God, Charlton is a magician.
So, let's talk about what really happened, shall we? Loa tried to put a little steam on this by meeting Finlay at the entrance and brawling with him as soon as he walked through the curtain. That was good. You know, points for that. That was a good idea. Long beat down on Finlay around the arena and in the ring. Finlay sold. In the midst of all this, Loa attempted what we think is supposed to be a 619. Ended up getting tangled in the ropes in a way that Mayu Iwatani could only dream of if she were trying. And
he only hit the 325 area code, not the 619.
Maybe that was it. Yeah, that might be it. Maybe he was there. And what I mean by Mayu Iwatani, Mayu Iwatani can sometimes kind of portray herself as being a little clumsy. And I know she's kind of got a goofy personality that's legit. She's kind of and she plays up the flaky thing and all that. But I always said that she has total body control. Like, she knows exactly what she's doing. Although she has slipped off ropes and things. This was one where a guy saw a move on TV and wanted to try it. And that's what this looked like. It looks like this man's never done a 619 before in his life and still hasn't. And they did both have, to give you an idea of how well Tongaloa was doing, Finlay was getting support from the crowd. And Loa had some too. I mean, they didn't totally turn on him, but This was
not a great night at the office for Tagaloa.
And he was coming off one of the worst Kamigoyes in the history of the world too, which also was made into a meme where he gave one to Ghetto that wouldn't have broken an egg, and he tripped over Ghetto's body and fell in order to try to beat him. So it was a rough week for Tagaloa. Finlay rallied late, got the overkill to win. Enough said, we're into the next round, and let's forget that ever happened.
Doing himself any favors. You watch the undercard and you saw him pull that chop routine against Great Okan last week, or, you know, he did the chop routine. He did it on Okada and it didn't look any better. You know, he came back from knee injury in the G1 and he was supposedly fully healed by November. There's no reason why this level of wrestling should be in the cup or in New Japan Pro Wrestling. There is a higher standard to this. And you can laugh it off and say, oh, hey, you don't understand. The business is the business. You know, it's like, I am good for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Sure, fine, whatever. But after a while, this becomes a joke and your stock is going down and I don't want his stock to go down. I want him to be able to be successful as a pro wrestler. He needs to stick to a moveset and a style that is conducive for what he's looking to do.
As well said. The next match was Hirooki Goto and Chase Owens. And how do you follow up Tongaloa? Well, you give Chase Owens 20 minutes. This was actually not half bad. Owens worked really hard, dominated this one early. He knew with Goto selling a lot that this was on him to carry. This was going to be the thing. Of course, he was on top most of the way early because he was doing the job at the end. He would run into the Goto wall sometimes, either a boot or a lariat or something like that, but Owens would get back on top. So it was mostly dominated by Owens early. Goto kept coming closer to getting the package pile driver, which is over as a move because they protect it. You know, he just beat Ishii with it. So anytime he would get close, the fans would kind of, because they felt like if he hits this thing, it actually is the end. He did C-trigger, Dream Killer. Goto managed to land a Shoto using the ropes, that finishing move he does with Yoshihashi, but instead of Yoshihashi using the ropes. That was about the 20-minute mark. He managed to avoid the package pile driver again and hit the GTR. I have to say this, you know, Owens worked really hard in his two matches, and the Ishii match was really good. Again, you know, people assumed, is Ishii carrying him? And Ishii did a lot of that. But I think Chase did his part in these two matches. Yes. I think he worked very hard. It was a better version of Chase than we've often gotten. And this was a pretty good performance from him. And it's healthy now. Both members of the tag team champions have lost to members of Bishamon in this tournament. So time for him to go back into the tag team ranks here. But while he was in this tournament, I thought Chase acquitted himself well.
I'm not necessarily sure that Chase Owens had a good Ishii match. I think he had a great match. You know, like there are people that wrestle a match with Ishii. And when I remember watching that match, it's like, that was the best match I've ever seen Chase Owens have. And it wasn't because he wrestled Ishii. It just... he wrestled a good match as a competent 34-year-old man who's been in the New Japan system for a while, and it was time to actually execute. The guy knew what he was doing.
And he was just in a pretty serious car wreck just before coming over for this tour, too. So, I mean, you know, not feeling 100%.
He is a professional, and he looked great there. He looked great in this match with Goto. I don't know if he is going to elevate some kind of mean streak and fit in with the War Dogs, because there might be an opportunity there for him. But whatever it is, if you're paying attention to New Japan, you're realizing that, the crown jewel over there is actually, you know, there's some value to that rock.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So, decent stuff from him on that one. So we move on now to Okayama on March 13th. And this one had attendance of 1,207, which is about even for what Okayama usually does. And the tournament matches were Hikuleo and Evil. Now, this is one little subplot they did do during the preview tags. There was a lot of House of Torture post-match beatdowns on Hikuleo over the course of the day, weakening his leg, trying to set up something for this match. So Evil went right to work on that leg when the match started. At 5 minutes mark, they even portrayed like he might not be able to continue, like they might have to stop it. But after that, Hikuleo did come back. We got the ref bump, House of Torture shenanigans. And even Perry came out to help him on that one. Hikuleo almost took out the whole Fandamly by himself, beating up everybody on the outside. So again, a lot of protection for Hikuleo here. They definitely seem to really be high on him, and that they don't even want to beat him without there being, you know, him coming back against almost the entire faction and even more shenanigans. But in the end, let's see, Tongaloa and ELP did come back out. So again, we're talking like the baby faces pushing back a little bit at House of Torture. Afterwards, though, Evil did manage to get him one-on-one and did beat him one-on-one clean, semi-clean. Like, there wasn't a foreign object blow from the outside or anything like that. It's just that House of Torture was run off. The rest of the baby faces left with them as they fought their way to the back. That left Evil and Hikuleo one-on-one. He ended up winning with Everything is Evil. And we still don't know who the next Never Open Weight challenger is, but we're starting to get a good idea, aren't we?
Yeah, I feel like Actually, I have a prediction that I'm not sure I have a prediction, but we'll see if we get there on that one. It just depends on how everything plays out. You know, I say it before, I'll say it again. Find me a company that loves a big man as much as New Japan loves Hikuleo. Like, they protect him. He's great. He is everything that you want a big guy to be. Beating him makes Evil look like a world beater going into the next couple rounds of the cup. And if anybody beats him, then they're even elevated more. I love the mechanics behind it. Let's keep moving.
Well, and also, they're booking him like a babyface Bad Luck Fale. Because Bad Luck Fale, when he was there, as a singles competitor, was always a threat. And won a lot of matches. And usually got to double digits in the G1. And there would be some sort of hook or crook even within the G1 to beat him. Like, he took a lot of like last second count out losses in the G1. Same thing with the New Japan Cup, where someone would get a flash pin on him or something. They didn't like to, there wasn't a lot of hit Fale with a finisher and pin him. That did happen sometimes, but they didn't do it very often. We're getting that with Hikuleo, where they just don't. This one was, he did hit everything as Evil, but it was after the entire House of Torture run in. Right. So
kitchen, you know, again, to protect Hikuleo.
Yeah, yeah, but it just reminds me of how they book Fale, except on the babyface side. They're just very careful with him. Shingo Takagi and Gabe Kidd was up next. Now, not a whole lot could go wrong here, and it went very right. This was a fun match. We got a Kidd jumpstart, long beat down of Shingo on the outside of the ring, and then the Shingo match began after that. You know, just hard-hitting, stiff stuff, but Kidd goes right along with that, and I've been saying it, I think Kidd is not going to win because he's not in the United States, but he's going to get votes for best brawler, the Bruiser Brody Award next year.
Yeah.
Because this guy knows how to do it.
We're only in March, and people are talking about like how he's overshadowing other people in New Japan. And it's just, they're not wrong.
They're not. Pile Driver got Kidd very close, but a pumping bomber, Last of the Dragon. So after a very hard-hitting match, very back and forth, a lot of machismo, the stuff, you know, snarling at each other and charging in at each other and taking turns hitting each other. It was a Shingo match, but Kidd does this kind of stuff too. It's really both of their types of matches. More brawly version of it, which is the Kidd factor of it. More of a brawl version of it. But this was really good. And I bet
this was a make good for the Rev Pro show.
I was just about to talk about that. I think that Rev Pro show probably would have been a bit more epic. I have a feeling they probably would have been given a little more time. But this felt like probably what they had in mind for that, which is just bruising. Yep. And in the end, Shingo winning at the end. And I thought it was interesting. Tsuji and Naito came out afterwards and had a very amicable thing, but that's not what we see very often from LIJ. But both Naito and Tsuji came out afterwards. Of course, Naito the champion, Tsuji still in the New Japan Cup. And they did the little fist raise, and everyone admired the belt a little bit. And they all, but it was all friendly. There were no turns, no even hints at a turn. But I did think that was interesting that Naito is still playing up the idea that I wouldn't mind defending this title against one of my stablemates.
Do you think just one of them, or every like multiple throughout the year?
Well, I think that both these guys are going to be in the world title picture. In the next few years. With Tsuji, you can't tell because they keep cutting off that group, you know, so it's hard to say because he might lose his next match with the way they book, you know, and it could all be over with in that end. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. Many flowers to Gabe Kidd, many flowers to Shingo Takagi. This was a fantastic brawling type match. And yeah, I have the bracketing after that.
And Venkin says Shingo can be there already. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Shingo could win this tournament. I mean, that could very well happen and face. He's held the world title before, so he's already world title level. So that's why Dunstan asked a question earlier. He says, who benefits more, Tsuji or Shingo, in the New Japan Cup? I think Tsuji would benefit more by winning it because Shingo is already at world title level. But sure. I think Shingo is the more likely pick to possibly win it than Tsuji
is. I would check it that.
And he also, and Dunstan also mentioned, by the way, he said, I want to get to his questions because he took the time to write them in. Do you think it's time New Japan are now utilizing the freelance talent in Japan more than their Gaijin talent? I don't see that. And the reason is, Dunstan, is again, with the economic situation, my guess is that they are going to lean heavily on the people they are already paying rather than bring in extra labor costs by bringing in freelancers and things. They have all these guys under contract. They're going to pay them this amount over the next year, whether they use them or not. I think they're going to use them because we're going to see some, because you have to mix things up a little bit. But are we in for a flood of freelance talent? I don't think so. I think they need to stick with the guys that are already on payroll.
They have done a little bit of a press campaign for Marufuji and Hiroshi Tanahashi exchanging business cards. So I wouldn't completely rule out Marufuji, but like a massive amount of people coming in, maybe a few, maybe like 1 to 4, just kind of to energize the mid card of New Japan. But I don't think it's going to be a renaissance or a complete paradigm shift on how they're doing business or anything like that.
Yeah, you're right. And Venkin says they did belt 2 freelancers. Yes, they did, but it's not like they're bringing in Nemeth very often. And in fact, he's probably only in for about 2 more matches. So it's not some lucrative long-term deal with Nemeth where he's going to be in and out. And as far as the other one goes with Riddle, we'll see.
As long as Naito has the top title, and as long as it stays on main event talent, the rest of them are all card titles.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I didn't say none, but I don't think there's going to be some big flood of it. And I don't think Nemeth is going to be around very much longer. Probably maybe 1 or 2 more. And that's about it for him. He's a TNA guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's got a good gig over there. So
in this round, we got 2 more matches and then we'll have the bracket for it.
Yeah. Sorry. So go ahead and bring up that. So we have Zack Sabre Jr. and Ren Narita. Again, this reminds me of a heel version of Yoshihashi's, that Narita's race is kind of run. They've made their point, I guess, is what I'm saying. So going with the idea of chalk being that they're kind of leaning on the favorites here, this feels like a Sabre win, but who knows? Maybe they're going to troll the living crap out of us and put Narita over again. You can't. One of the variables about House of Torture is you can't really feel confident about anyone beating them just because there's so many shenanigans they can pull and give people an excuse. This seems like a way to get Zach a little bit further on.
So there's a major part of me that believes that New Japan is firmly behind Zack Sabre Jr. this year and going forward. And with that, you have him as one of 4 people that had a bye in the first round. And all of the other 3 advanced beyond their first match that they had within after the bye. I don't see Zack Sabre Jr. losing his first match after a bye. And so it's going to be a good match, but I think Zack Sabre Jr. is poised to be able to rise above the House of Torture. Yes.
And Venkin mentions what happens when it's House of Torture versus House of Torture. I think we might see that in the G1. I think they might do something like that. It would be an entertaining thing to just say, let's just have the one match in the G1 just be Gonzo. Sure. God only knows what they do. So I do think we're going to get that eventually. I think so. And it'll probably be some overbooked extravaganza of silliness. After that, we have
an interesting one.
Yeah. Yoda Tsuji and El Phantasmo. If we get the flying energetic El Phantasmo, not necessarily the one we saw against Mikey Nichols, but maybe one that's a little bit more El Phantasmo-y, this could be fun.
Yeah. I kind of looked at it and I was kind of quiet and I was like, yeah, all right. I can vibe that. I like what El Phantasmo brings to the table. I kind of think I know where this is going to go. And I think Yoda Tsuji is, especially after that promo with Shingo and Naito, they really want to position both of them as viable for the next couple of days.
And that is Friday, March 15th. So that's just in a few hours, really, less than 12 hours in Osaka. And now we're in a different building than usual. There's my venue nerd stuff, Jeremy. We are in the Kaneoka Park Gym. The reason is they can't go to the usual arena, the little prefectural gym number 2 that they use frequently when it's not a huge show, is part of the Edeon Arena complex. So picture where they did New Beginning in Osaka. The famous building with the kind of the domed roof, not domed roof, but a semicircular roof and all that. That building is being used right now for the Osaka Grand Sumo Tournament. So that is a very big deal. And so that building is off limits. That's booked to high hell. So that's packed every night.
You can be stoked that he's in town for it.
Right. Yeah. I hope he gets to see something. Well, that might be going on at the same time, wouldn't it? But either way, go Onosato, hoping that you continue your meteoric rise, the super rookie in sumo. I watch the highlights every night. I really do. Yeah. So that's going on there at in Osaka at Kaneoka Park Gym tomorrow morning. El Fantasma Yotasuji, Zack Sabre Jr. against Ren Narita. Sunday in Aichi, we will see. So Saturday, we're off again. Sunday in Aichi. Saturday in Aichi, Sunday in Shizuoka. We're not off. It's 3 days in a row. Steven, come on. Saturday in Aichi, Hirooki Goto against David Finlay and Sanada versus Jack Perry. So I feel like we're either going to see Goto versus Perry or Sanada versus Finlay. I don't think they're going to put the War Dogs against House of Torture here. So it feels like a heel is kind of coming out of that side of the bracket. So my guess, you know, just if I had to make a guess right here, I'm picking Finlay and Sanada and some more chalk. But if it doesn't go that way, I think we'll get the total opposite of Goto versus Perry. It's just my
guess. You remember what the New Japan Cup final was last year?
I think it was, what was it? It was Sanada and
Finlay.
Finlay, wasn't it? Yeah, oh yeah, it was. It was Sanada and Finlay.
I think we're getting that run back at the semis.
Maybe with the opposite winner.
Look, I said it before, I'll say it again. Ghetto's not so crazy that he's going to run Sonata and Naito, or even threaten running Sonata and Naito three times in the first 4 months of the year.
By the way, I love our audience. Colin watches the sumo also. So he's watching Go Onosato. This guy, Jeremy, he's been called the Shohei Ohtani of sumo. He's this 23-year-old kid that is just beating everybody except like the Ozekis and the Yokozuna. There's only one Yokozuna right now, Taruno Fuji, but this guy is supposed to be the future, and he's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to watch. Awesome. I think his name's Daisuke Nakamura or something like that. His real name, it's Onosato, is a sumo name, but anyway, somebody you might be hearing about, who knows? So
I'll probably hear more about it.
Probably from me, because I can't stop talking. I enjoy this stuff. Sunday in Shizuoka, Shingo Takagi against Evil. And let's see.
The match of tonight. The winner of the match of tonight will be the other match that we have seen. Let's just say Yota Tsuji versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Okay. There you have it. So Tsuji against Sabre Jr. That would also set up Tsuji as the next never open weight title contender. So that's not a bad idea.
So if we were to look at this from here and we were to get a Shingo and Evil and Yota Tsuji and Zack Sabre Jr., I feel like, wow, I don't see Zack Sabre Jr. making it to the semifinals, past the semifinals. I don't think he's making it to the finals. But I think Shingo beats Evil. And I think that sets up Shingo for an ever open weight title match.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yep. Okay.
But Shingo won't win in the finals, leaving Finlay for the title match.
I didn't have the bracket up in front of me as I had my notes in front of me, and I had flip-flopped Tsuji and Shingo's side of the bracket. So you're absolutely right. It would be Shingo was the next never open weight title. Oh, no losers there. I mean, Shingo and Evil would probably be a terrific match.
Evil is clearly being positioned as one of the top heels in all of New Japan right now. So it wouldn't even shock me if Shingo wasn't able to win the title off of him, and then makes it one of these ultra titles that people are chasing after.
So there you have it. And we'll also take a look at the semifinals now. We're going to be, semifinals Monday in Fukushima, finals Wednesday in Niigata. So by the time we reconvene here next week, we'll know who the New Japan Cup winner is and who will be facing Tetsuya Naito at Sakura Genesis. So
final answer for your prediction, Steven.
I think it might be. I still can't really decide between Shingo and Finlay. I think this is such a great opportunity to have an interfaction match without breaking up a faction. Yes. So I want Shingo versus Naito I think I'm going to get Finlay versus Naito, which won't be bad. I just want Shingo versus Naito.
I think we're getting Finlay versus Naito. I don't. I would not have a problem with Shingo versus Naito. There's a lot of reasons why it worked really well as a title match before, presumably, Moxley versus Naito. And what I'd ultimately like to see is Moxley versus Naito for the title again at Forbidden Door as one of the top matches, because that's one of the premier things that they could do for that New York City show. But I don't know if they're going in that direction.
And Venkin mentions Evil wants to go for Naito too. Well, everybody does, but Evil already has a belt that they need to kind of get a match for.
Yeah.
That's my counter to that. And he also mentions that when is Sakura Genesis? April 6th. Saturday, April 6th is going to be Sakura Genesis. Colin says no one wants Finlay winning it. Well, he is a heel. And I understand what you mean. I understand what you mean. But there might be a
you can't have good guys without bad guys, people.
Yeah, darkness and light, right? And it is a guy that Naito could beat to get to the Moxley thing. I don't think he's losing at Sakura Genesis, no matter who it is, because I think he's going to go into that Moxley match as the
champion. I watch, he totally does.
And Venkin mentioned same day as Mania. Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. It's April 6th. So for the first night there. And Venkin also mentions two Cinderella days again. Yeah, the Cinderella tournament, their March Madness and Stardom is going on. And that tournament will continue this weekend as well. So a lot of good wrestling. And that brings us to a very smooth segue, because in Stardom, this past weekend at Corican Hall, Stephanie Vaquer came over from Mexico. And this was a big one, because Friday night in Arena Mexico, they had an all-women's show and didn't have Stephanie Vaquer on it, because she was coming over to Japan to wrestle Julia at Corican on Sunday for the Strong NJPW Strong Women's title. She defeated Julia in a very good match. I watched it earlier today. It's fabulous. It's now up on Stardom World. Very good match. Also, by the way, Julia's last successful title defense, a no-holds-barred match against Natsuko Tora, is up on NJPW World, the New Japan service. Fantastic match. Go watch it. It was also from Corican Hall. Really good match. And Vaquer is just covered in belts right now. I think she has three. She's on the biggest roll of her career. She is now the NJPW Strong Women's Champion. It brings the belt back to North America. She does not have the visa issues that a lot of the CMLL workers do. So I think we're going to be seeing Vaquer in various places, especially with CMLL working with Ring of Honor, AEW, New Japan. I think we're going to be seeing Vaquer Chicago. Perhaps, we don't know, Forbidden Door, no announcements. I'm not trying to break news. I'm just saying that this is somebody that is in a much more convenient spot to bring
stock in. Stock is rising, and she's going to be going everywhere as a result.
She's excellent. And she reversed the Northern Lights bomb into a DDT, and then got a victory roll type of roll-up. She's affiliated as a heel with Oedo Tai, not an official member, but affiliated with Oedo Tai in Japan. And they use that. An Oedo Tai attack to kind of set up the Tam Nakano save on Julia, which leads the Hell Freezing Over tag team before Julia leaves the promotion. But point being, Vaquer is going to be on a lot of these shows, the NJPW Strong shows. We'll be seeing more of her. It's a good thing, people. She's really good.
Absolutely. Forgot to do something at the top of the show, and we need to wish happy birthday to a friend of the podcast, Chris Samsa. It's his birthday today. So I just wanted to throw that out there and make sure that say, hey, Chris, we hope you have a happy birthday. Thanks for coming on the show last week. We'll see you soon.
And Venkin says, I saw a lot of people dislike the Vaquer match. They think the shoulder was up. Well, I mean, you know, it was a good match. So when she did the victory roll, they may have over rolled a little bit and Julie got the shot. I can't bring myself to worry too much about that, but it was a good match. I'll stick on that hill. I think that Vaquer and Julia had a real good match right there. So
we had a couple of random news and notes about April information. So I'm going to throw that up here right now.
Yeah.
The Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Champions have been announced to have a one-night tournament in Taipei.
Yeah.
In Taiwan. So that actually is interesting, because that means that whoever is competing in that probably won't be at the Windy City Riot in Chicago, because Walker Stewart is going to be live at the Windy City, and he will not be able to make it out to the show to call it. So that would also presume to me that the talent will not be able to be out there to call it either. So I'm very curious about what the never open weight six-man title contestant could be, because I don't have the Windy City lineup right now, but there were people that I was looking at. I was like, oh, that would be interesting, but I would rule them out.
Yeah, they're sending a lot of big names to that Taipei show. This is very important to New Japan. They're sending Stardom talent there as well. Yes. And we'll be taking a hard look at that as the date approaches, coming up here fairly soon. So that's going to be, yeah, and Colin says that's the same time as the Stardom show. It's the same show. This is going to be a combined Stardom and New Japan event.
The wrestling world, right?
Yeah, the wrestling world thing. So we're going to be seeing a lot of that over there. And this tournament will be coming up. So, no, we don't have which teams are involved. But, yeah, it's time to do something with that. You know, it's been a little while. And this is a good chance. You can tell they're taking this very seriously. They're also working with a local promotion there. So there's going to be some Frontier Zone action there with local guys on the card. So this is a real outreach to a new market that seems to be very important to Bushiroad. So, and Vankin says we won't get mixed tag. No, it's not supposed to be like a historic crossover where you have New Japan and Stardom talent on one team. It's mostly going to be like Stardom matches within New Japan matches on the card. That's what we're looking for there.
Steven, we're not paid by New Japan. We don't get promotional consideration provided by the following or anything like that. But yeah. I would like to...
You almost did it in your Lord Alfred Hayes voice there.
I almost did. That. But I wanted to show you some merchandise for the Windy City Riot that stumbled across.
Hey, and we're not above cheap merchandising here.
We're not above talking about some of the merchandise. Take a look at these two shirts.
Honestly, oh, yeah.
Those are pretty rad shirts.
Oh, working the flag of Chicago in on the...
Working the LIJ. That's a great-looking shirt.
This hits me in the heart. That's the flag of... Now, the flag of Chicago. Chicago, one of the few cities that has its own flag that is different than the state of Illinois. And it's got the stars, the blue. CM Punk often incorporates this into his gear. Not always, but sometimes. So, nice. So the flag of Chicago with the red stars and the blue... With the War Dogs and LIJ logos, this is now you're speaking my language here. I'm enjoying this.
Now, I look at this and think, wow, they're really tapping into the market. And this is great. People really asking for this kind of merchandise. Now, let me ask you this. If I were to show you the next picture, do you think anyone has asked for this kind of merchandise?
Oh, yeah. Heck yes. Who doesn't
Bullet want... Club War Dog throw pillow?
Heck yes.
For all your Bullet Club brutality needs in your home.
Shut up and take my money.
Chicago commemorative edition of the Bullet Club War Dog logo on your own limited edition throw pillow for any part of your house.
I am calling my bank and asking them to raise my credit limit. I got to know. Vankin, by the way, my goodness, sir. Is there a Jack Perry one with Crimea, Chicago River? You, sir, are a genius. You sure are a genius. Yeah, well, I mean, they're about to dye the river green.
I died. That's the
St. Patrick's Day thing. They dyed the Chicago River bright green for St. Patrick's Day that's coming. Huh?
Do they still do that?
And they do that, yeah. And, of course, the question, as they asked, the classic question that they asked, and they even put it in The Fugitive, which is that Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones movie that was set in Chicago. They just said, if they can dye the river green on St. Patrick's Day, why can't they dye it blue the rest of the year? So it doesn't look just gray like it usually does. But yeah, they still do it. They still dye the river green every St. Patrick's Day.
I literally asked somebody and I'm like, hey, did you take that throw pillow picture at your house? And they're like, God, no. And I was like, fair enough.
And Colin mentions, by the way, Mina Shirakawa from Stardom was at the Ring of Honor taping. So they brought Mina all the way over. So cool. Glad to see that. Yeah, we're getting more of this stuff there. And it's a good news for fans. We're going to these Ring of Honor, CMLL, New Japan, Stardom. They're working together. They are working. And these things always work until they don't. And I'm not trying to be a smart ass about that, but it all it takes is for one party to get a little pissed off at the other and feel like they're the lower person on the totem. So let's enjoy it while it's happening. let's enjoy that
first week in April where Stardom is working Ring of Honor and maybe Ring of Honor is working a little bit of Stardom and everyone's going to be cooperating. And then we potentially get CMLL and Stardom and all of that Forbidden Door, according to some of these reports. I don't know how long this is going to last. Enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
And just from what, just historically, speaking historically, the one to worry about is CMLL, which sometimes gets a little too isolationist and territorial, but it ebbs and flows. And right now it's flowing. So we'll take it. Yeah, I'm happy to see it.
Do you have any news and notes before you sure talk do. To Yoshi?
We do. Kaito Kiyomiya and Ryohei Oiwa have been participating in the NOAH Tag Team Tournament. And it's called the Victory Challenge Tag League. And Oiwa and Kiyomiya won it. Now, they finished the block play in second place, but they defeated Saxon Huxley and Timothy Thatcher. Who finished with the most points.
Both former NXT talents.
Both, and to win the Victory Challenge Tag League. So they will be getting a shot at NOAH Tag Team, the GHC Tag Team Champions, Jack Morris and Anthony Green. So if you're ever wondering just how Oiwa's excursion over in NOAH is going, well, he's about to get a title shot. He's still teaming with Kaito Kiyomiya, and they put him over quite a bit in that tournament, finished second in the standings and then won the thing. So Oiwa doing quite well over there.
That's fantastic to hear. That dude is benefiting from his time with Kaito Kiyomiya, and it's good to see. He's growing at a pace that I'm not sure the other Young Lions, when they were off on excursion, had the ability to grow. Him and Ryohei Oiwa both, or the guy TMDK, the guy.
Oh, Kosei Fujita.
Kosei Fujita. Yeah. I just completely. Yeah.
It's okay. All right. So but also worth mentioning too, and it's, this is good. This is coming from the viewers here, of course. Venkin said he was surprised Mina was over so early, and she's a hell of a good wrestler. So I'm glad too. You know, you worry sometimes that people are going to sit and stare because they don't know who they are, but Mina got over. It's great. And she's in Philadelphia next month. And yes, and Colin mentions the Stardom show from Philadelphia on WrestleMania weekend. Is going to be on April the 4th, not quite the weekend, a little bit before then, if it's April the 4th. But that's going to be available on Triller if you want to go look at it. So,
weekend for Triller.
Some, no kidding. But, I mean, that's what WrestleMania is. It's like the South by Southwest of wrestling, where I say that because South by Southwest is going on here in Austin right now. But sometimes, Jeremy, the unofficial events are as much fun as the official event. You know, all the little things that pop up around it and outside of it. Like, they're really good music showcases that aren't part of South By but are taking place during South By, so you can go to those too. And that's a little bit of what's going on with WrestleMania, where all these promotions from around the world are gathering in Philadelphia and putting on shows left and right. So it's just a festival going on out there, and Stardom's going to be a part of it. And they're bringing a heavyweight lineup. I mean, these are real stars they're sending over there, not real big names in Stardom coming over to Philadelphia.
You just reminded me, and this is completely as an aside, South by Southwest is announcing new information about the X-Men comic book line. And I'm immediately going to go read about it as soon as the show is over, because that's exactly the kind of nerd that I am.
Sure. It's all going on in town right now. That's why half the streets downtown are blocked.
I got to go check it out, dude. I love my X-Men comic books. I got to do the quick Fight Game Media plug before we get into the little bit of summer news that we're going to do to wrap up the show. So we are members of the Fight Game Media Network. This is our YouTube channel. We also have an audio network. Right now, our shows that we offer are The Wrap, The Dynamite Show, The Double G Show, Popcorn and Pile Drivers, and The 5-Star Joshi Show. On the YouTube channel, it is ourselves, Speaking Strong Style, Power Bombshell, Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, and the 5-Star Joshi Show occasionally, as well as the Dynamite Show. If you like our content, please like, subscribe, share our content anywhere. We also have our own dedicated audio feed by looking up Speaking Strong Style in all of our major podcast catchers. In addition to that, I just wanted to take a moment and extend our best wishes, both of us, to friends of the podcast, JD Oliva and Jeff Hawkins, who both of them have gone through some family stuff and you can check their socials at JD Oliva and Crap Game 13 if you want to know more. But going through stuff that we all know in life that we have to deal with, and we just have our best wishes to them if they have to navigate it at this current time. Yeah. So absolutely. With that, I'm going to give it to Steven, who is going to continue with the rest of the best wishes towards a wrestler who recently passed.
So Yutaka Yoshi passed away. He was wrestling for All Japan at the time. He's been wrestling all over Japan, but he passed away this past week, not for anything that happened in the ring, although it happened after a show. As a lot of people have probably heard, he worked a mid-card match for All Japan, came back to the locker room, said he wasn't feeling very well, and then they brought him to the hospital, and unfortunately he passed away there at the hospital. Again, he wasn't injured in the ring. It wasn't due to that. It was a natural condition, I mean, arterial sclerosis there. But unfortunately, Yutaka Yoshi has passed away, and he has New Japan connections. And of course, it would be an unfortunate situation no matter where, but he does. We're a New Japan show, so I thought I would look at his career. He was, as you can see in the picture that's up right now for the folks that are listening, he is a very burly guy, just very thick built, wide shoulders, thick chest and back, and over a 300 pounder basically, and about 5'10", big guy. And he is originally from Gunma, was into judo before wrestling. He debuted on December 9th, 1994. And he lost to Satoshi Kojima in the opening match. That was when Kojima himself was only 3 years into his career. Kojima started in 91 and Yoshi in 1994. So sadly, he broke his leg very soon after his debut and missed almost his entire rookie year, but came back and stuck with it. And he was out until December 1995, so basically a year after that. But by the way, on his first show, to show you who his contemporaries were, I mentioned Kojima was in the opening match of that one. That's where he was. And you also had Eddie Guerrero as the Black Tiger. Chris Benoit was Wild Pegasus on that one. El Samurai, Yuji Nagata, fairly early, not early in his career. Nagata had been, but yeah, fairly. Nagata was in that one. Shinjiro Otani. So a lot of big names. And then, of course, the Three Musketeers were toward the top back then in 1994. He went to Europe to wrestle for Otto Vons and the CWA. When he came back, he had bulked up quite a bit. He had really added a lot of muscle. So they put him in Yuji Nagata's stable. And that was probably his biggest singles push when he came back then. But when that kind of came about and that group broke up, he found himself back in the mid-card, which is really where he spent the vast majority of his career. He did have a run where he and a very young Hiroshi Tanahashi won the IWGP tag team titles. They actually beat Masahiro Chono and Tenzan. And if you want to go back, that match is on NJPW World. You can see a very young Tanahashi and Tenzan when he was big, thick, and bulky and hadn't had all the nerve damage that he's had now. You see Tenzan, he almost has those small arms and things. And this is a flashback to me because when I really started watching current New Japan, it was my tape trading days, and Tenzan was kind of the hotshot heel, young with Chono. And Tenzan was a Hulk. He was just a big, just a big brute. So it was kind of cool to see that and then see a very young Tanahashi. And that was his peak in New Japan, really, was that tag team title victory. He was back in the mid-card soon after that. So he decided it was time to leave. In about 2006, he left New Japan. And I know that I just covered, about 12 years right there, but he did spend most of it just kind of in the mid-card. And he was a guy on the shows. He was used consistently, but only had that one little singles push and then the tag title run. So decided it was time to go. He worked for everybody, just about every, which is a testament to him, just about every promotion you've heard of eventually booked him. So he was good at what he did. He filled out a card well and was a good hand, so to speak, right, Jeremy? Just a good guy to have on the card because he worked for All Japan, 0-1. Noah, Dragon's Gate, Osaka Pro, Tradition, which was Tetsumi Fujinami's company, and a bunch more. Those are just the one. But if you've heard of this company, basically, he's worked for it. And in All Japan, his biggest thing was he held the All Japan tag team titles with Akebono, who was a former grand sumo champion, a Yokozuna. Again, Yokozuna is the very peak of grand sumo wrestling. Those are the elite of the elite. And Akebono was one of the Yokozuna and got into pro wrestling after that, wrestled for New Japan. And he's made a couple appearances at Wrestle Kingdoms in the pre-Wrestle Kingdom January 4th shows. So he teamed with Akebono. And if you see the size of Yoshi, and then you think about Akebono, who was a monster of a man,
right.
That's quite a dual mountain to climb for any tag team. So they held the All Japan Tag Team title. So, you know, just a guy that obviously was, you know, good enough at his job, pleasant enough to work with, that he worked consistently from 1994 until his passing this year. So almost a 30 year career, really, almost, and was only 50 years old. So way too young, but yeah, former New Japan wrestler, Yutaka Yoshi, passing away just this past week.
50 is young. You know, I'm 43. So now I'm looking at, like, when I was a little younger, I thought, wow, 50? Yeah. He had a good run. Like, now
I'm looking down the barrel. 50? I'm looking down the barrel.
No.
Yeah,
I got way more. So, just you hear what happened, and you're just like, it just sucks. You know, yeah. Like, the family is just saying, don't worry about it. Like, it wasn't wrestling related. We don't have to legislate stuff.
Yeah,
like,
and keep in mind, that's an English translation of a jab. So when a lot of people kind of bristle with it, said, don't worry about it. And that's the translation. Remember, Japanese and English aren't clean. You know, I think it's more of the lines of,
but please don't. You can alleviate the concern that you have about this.
Yeah, wrestling did not kill him.
Yeah.
That's not what happened. This was not an injury.
You know, it looked like Paraguayo in Mexico or anything like that, you know, but you know, you have it, and you just kind of, like, the breath kind of falls out when you kind of read about a wrestler dying at a show. And, you know, like, there are friends and colleagues and people that he worked with that had to go through with that and had to, like, see that and be a part of it. You know, it's hard. You know, it's like, I've been in a position where a coworker has died, and you're just like, it messes you up. And I just hope that they're all able to navigate that moving forward.
And it sounds like, again, we don't have weren't there, but it sounds like everybody did everything they could, because this was not a situation where somebody tried to tough something out or the promotion was cold to him. He got back to the locker room, said he wasn't feeling well. They took him to the hospital, and, you know, the doctors did everyone did what they could. And it was apparently just his time. So this is not one of those wrestling stories where, unfortunately, the business it hurts somebody. It does sound like this was just his time, and unfortunately, he was awfully young for that. But sometimes the universe decides that for us. And you know, Yoshi, best wishes to his family and his friends, and our hearts are with them as they go through a difficult time. But and the All Japan locker room, who've lost a colleague. So you know, best of luck to everybody there getting past this.
Condolences to all affected by this loss. Steven, we're gonna wrap this up pretty quick, but we are 4 episodes away from episode 100. Do you have any ideas about what we should do to celebrate this? Should we just put out a call and see if people want to come on the show, celebrate? Should we just do a normal show? Like, I don't know where it falls on our, like, where things are happening and when, but it's kind of around Windy City and
Yeah, well, who knows? I don't know.
Are you the guy that walked the party for 100, or you just want to be like, hey, good job?
I'm more of a good job. I'm not a big demonstrative person when it comes to that stuff. I'm very proud that we've done
the head nod and back to work kind of for you.
Well, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if something comes up, that's great. But what I'm mostly happy about is that we've gotten to do this nearly 100 times, and it looks like we're going to make it to 100. And it just makes me grateful for the folks here, like Venkin and Dustin and Colin and all the people that are regular viewers and listeners. And everything else that have, whether you comment or not, you know, like, and we're very grateful for the folks that do, but we're just as grateful for the people who watch and listen. And just the idea that we've been able to sit down here almost 100 times and talk about our favorite promotion and how it's going. I mean, it doesn't get much better. I'm just so happy that we've been able to do it for this long and this many times because I'm having a blast.
We love to participate in the New Japan community, but at the same time, I am continually gobsmacked to think that we have some type of voice that people listen to about New Japan. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. So with that in mind, we will wrap it up for this week, and we'll see what comes up. Maybe yeah. Something will come up for the 100. But in the meantime, that's it for Speaking of Strong Style this week. For Jeremy Finestone, I'm Stephen Conway. We'll be back next week with the ending of the New Japan Cup. With that in mind, everybody, we will talk to you again very soon.
Peace out.